Welcome to episode 21 of our podcast series. This episode features material from our August 2024 print edition of the Residential Aged Care Communique. I'm Professor Joseph Ibrahim, the editor. This podcast presents two cases highlighting the poorer outcomes that can occur for older persons following relatively minor trauma and how the desired goals of care may influence decision-making in a trauma scenario. Our expert commentary on trauma geriatricians is by Kate Gregorovich. Our narrator is Ashley Redman, a practicing registered nurse and actor. Let's now listen to the editorial.
Table of Contents. Editorial. Case 1. A small fall but major injuries. Case 2. A fall with head strike. Expert commentary. Trauma geriatricians. Editorial. By Professor Joseph E. Ibrahim. Welcome to the August edition of the Residential Aged Care Communique, which focuses on the emerging field of geriatric trauma management. As the population of older adults has continued to grow, it has become increasingly apparent that the existing specialised trauma care services need to alter and adapt to meet the different needs of this older population. There are obvious differences between the young middle-aged adults compared to older adults in their health, comorbidities, prescribed medication, functional and frailty status. Less obvious are the differences in the mechanisms of injury, with low-velocity falls being the most common in older persons. The usual application of vital signs in triage are also not as reliable in older persons. The need for multidisciplinary, team-based care with detailed understanding of a patient's decision-making capacity, goals of care, and prevention of delirium are especially important in trauma care of older persons. It is important for all healthcare workers to better understand contemporary geriatric trauma management, as it does not begin or end in the acute care hospital specialist centres. For example, preparation to manage these acute trauma situations requires an advanced care plan and having a legally appointed medical decision maker. The two cases in this edition highlight the poorer outcomes that can occur for older persons following trauma, and how the desired goals of care may influence decision-making in a trauma scenario. Our expert commentary in this edition is written by Dr. Kate Gregovic, a geriatrician and internal medicine physician who works in both acute hospital medicine and community settings. Kate has completed a PhD looking at the impact of positive psychosocial factors in the development of frailty in older adults.
Let's now listen to a description of our first case report titled A Small Fall But Major Injuries.
Case 1. A Small Fall But Major Injuries. Case Precy Author. Professor Joseph Ibrahim. Clinical Summary. Mr. DC was a 92-year-old male with a past medical history of heart failure, atrial fibrillation, prescribed rivaroxaban, an anticoagulant, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, chronic renal failure, hypertension, diabetes mellitus, and gout. He mobilized with a four-wheel walker and had a history of frequent falls and non-adherence to medication, one of which was an anticoagulant. A change to more appropriate footwear and use of non-slip socks were also recommended. One summer day, Mr. DC had a fall at home in the kitchen. He hit the handle of the oven and severely lacerated his head, requiring medical attention at an acute care hospital. Rather than returning home, Mr. DC was convinced by his family to enter an aged care facility for a few weeks of respite care. At the expiry of the respite period, Mr. DC became a permanent resident at the same facility. A number of strategies were implemented to address Mr. DC's high risk of falling, including lowering his bed and placing alarm mats in his room to call staff when he arose. The following 3 months were relatively uneventful, interrupted only by two episodes of cellulitis of the lower legs and a fall, resulting in a bruised right arm and thigh. It was late autumn when Mr. DC had another unwitnessed fall. Staff found him on the bathroom floor with bruising in his right leg, extending from his hip to knee. The registered nurse completed a clinical assessment and sought a second opinion because things were not looking right, and the ambulance was called. Mr. DC was transferred to the acute care hospital, where imaging studies showed a left hemothorax, blood in the chest cavity, and rib fractures, and a CT scan of his brain showed no abnormalities. About 1 week later, a chest X-ray showed cardiomegaly, enlarged heart, and congested lungs with left lower lobe consolidation. The left lower lobe consolidation and left-sided pleural effusion hemothorax appear to have increased in size compared to admission. Mr. DC's family were advised that the hospital did not have a thoracic surgical unit, and any surgical intervention would require transfer to a larger teaching hospital, which was approximately a three-hour drive away. The best course of action was considered a conservative approach, since Mr. DC's daughter explained he would not want to be resuscitated. Therefore, full ward management and an intercostal catheter, chest tube, plus supportive care were instituted. Mr. DC was prescribed opioids and regular paracetamol. However, he became increasingly drowsy. The opioids were ceased, and pain control was achieved with insertion of a catheter for an erector spinae block. During his two-week inpatient stay, Mr. DC developed a delirium and had a number of medical emergency team calls due to the tachypnea, which was likely secondary to the pain. When the intercostal catheter was removed, he became tachypneic, desaturated, and slowly deteriorated over the ensuing days with the development of pneumonia. He died a few days later. Pathology. The family initially objected to a full post-mortem as Mr. DC was deeply religious, and they believed he would not want it. The family agreed instead to a limited non-invasive post-mortem, which consisted of a CT scan, a review of hospital records, and an external examination. The cause of death was listed as complications arising from a fall which occurred, resulting in a left hemothorax and rib fractures and the development of pneumonia. Investigation. The coronial investigation gathered evidence from a number of reports, including the police report of Mr. DC's death, the health service death report, the forensic pathologist report, the report of the coronial nursing consultant, as well as the medical records from the health service, the aged care facility and the general practice, and statements from the family. Mr. DC's son explained that he and his family had no issues with the medical care at the hospital or the care received at the aged care facility. The report of the coronial nursing consultant identified that Mr. DC was functioning fairly well cognitively. However, he was hard of hearing, and English was his second language. He used a four-wheel walker to mobilize and required assistance or supervision of one carer to mobilize and for all transfers. Mr. DC was assessed on multiple occasions by the physiotherapist, who considered that his shortness of breath on exertion and poor balance limited his mobility. Recommendations to the care staff included reinforcing the use of non-slip socks and use of a call bell to ensure assistance when mobilizing. Recommendations to the family included ensuring they provided him with a good, well-fitting footwear and clothes. 2 months after entry, sensor mats were installed in Mr. DC's room to alert staff if he was mobilizing, and a podiatrist assessed and treated his feet. It was clear from the documentation that Mr. DC was regularly reviewed by the physiotherapist after each fall, and then at other times when they conducted their comprehensive assessments. Therefore, his falls risk was frequently reassessed. Falls prevention strategies that were put in place for Mr. DC included: keep pathway clear at all times. Ensure lighting is appropriate for the time of day. Encourage Mr. DC to use his four-wheel walker at all times. Increased general observation levels. Suitable footwear. Call bell to be within reach. Regular physiotherapist review and 6 weekly podiatry reviews. In addition to what was noted in one section of the notes, it appeared crash mats were in place in Mr. DC's room, and possibly a bed sensor was also in place. The coronial nursing consultant considered Mr. DC was at high risk of falling as he was not particularly compliant with seeking assistance when he wished to mobilise. His falls all appeared to have been unwitnessed, suggesting he attempted to mobilise or transfer independently, which made it very challenging for staff to keep him safe. The falls risk assessment was up to date. There were three issues that required clarification. 1. The sensor mat was not working 3 weeks before the fall that required hospitalisation. Had this been addressed? 2. It was unclear why, despite the multiple recommendations from the physiotherapist that Mr. DC required appropriate footwear and non-slip socks, he was dressed in neither when he fell. 3. It became apparent that a kitchen staff member had witnessed Mr. DC mobilising independently, but it was unclear why the care staff were not notified of this fact. The aged care facility was given an opportunity to respond to these issues and responded as follows. In regards to the three comments, I am unable to comment as I started my position after Mr. DC had passed away. The coroner recommended, in circumstances where a resident has been assessed as requiring a sensor mat, that he or she is to wear appropriate footwear and or non-slip socks, and he or she is not to mobilise independently, then the aged care facility ensure such recommendations are implemented at all times. Editor's comments. It is disappointing to see the facility staff's limited response to the follow-up questions from the coroner. It appears to be defensive, rather than recognising that the court's role is one of prevention and public safety. While it was understandable that the new manager was not in a position to offer direct experience of the situation, the questions might have been at least partially addressed from internal documents and discussions with existing staff. The coroner made note that this is obviously a completely inappropriate response and chose on this occasion not to pursue the matter further.
Let's now listen to a description of our second case report titled A Fall with Head Strike.
Case 2. A Fall with Head Strike. Case Bracey author, Dr. Supriya Ramakrishnan, consultant geriatrician. Clinical summary. Mr. J.H. was a 92-year-old widower who was successfully living alone with a home care support package. He was highly educated, with a master's degree and a PhD in his chosen profession, and physically very fit, being an active bushwalker. 2 years earlier, he was diagnosed with early-stage Alzheimer's disease. In the late summer of 2020, Mr. J.H. experienced worsening back pain, weight loss, and a deterioration in mobility. Following a medical review by his general practitioner, Mr. J.H. was admitted to a private acute care hospital where he was diagnosed and treated for an infection in the spine. Mr. J.H. responded well to the treatment, gained some weight, and his mobility improved. About 3 weeks later, he entered a residential aged care facility, and the first month was uneventful. In early May, Mr. J.H. had an unwitnessed fall in his room in the middle of the night. He pressed the call bell and the staff attended his room. They noticed blood on his right eyebrow and on the bridge of his nose from skin tears in those areas. Mr. J.H. was alert, responsive to verbal commands, and there was no change to his conscious state. Mr. J.H. told staff that when he got out from the bed and stood up, he felt dizzy. He then fell on the floor and hit his head. He reported pain at the base of his neck. Staff conducted a head-to-toe assessment, and he was able to move both arms and legs without difficulty with strong grip strength. 2 days later, his general practitioner noted a deterioration in Mr. J.H.'s condition and organised for an ambulance transfer to the nearest tertiary public hospital. A CT scan of the brain revealed a subdural hemorrhage. The neurosurgical team at the hospital deemed the subdural hematoma as inoperable. Mr. J.H.'s daughter was advised this was likely a life-ending event and palliative care was commenced. Mr. J.H. returned to the residential aged care facility in the early afternoon of the following day. and died within 4 hours. Pathology. A post-mortem examination was conducted the day after death. The forensic pathologist concluded that the cause of death was the subdural hemorrhage. Investigation. Mr. J.H.'s death was a reportable death due to the fall. The coronial medical consultant reviewed the case details, and the coroner decided that given the circumstances of Mr. J.H.'s death, there was no need for any recommendations or comments with respect to the fall. Editor's comments. This case exemplifies the issues confronting contemporary geriatric trauma management. First, low-velocity falls are the most common cause of traumatic injury in older persons. Second, the closed head injury is one of the classic injury patterns. Third, despite the innocuous mechanism, the injury is fatal. Fourth, a high index of suspicion is required for diagnosis. Fifth, a low threshold for use of imaging to complete the initial assessment. Sixth, understanding the goals of care and communication to promote patient-centered care. Seventh, offering treatment aligned with values and preferences rather than proceeding to a surgical intervention. 8. Communication and clear understanding of a follow-up treatment plan that occurs in the aged care facility. Finally, it is preferable to make a quick and accurate determination about the appropriateness and benefits of specialised trauma care to avoid unnecessary transfers from the aged care facility. Postscript note. There are additional circumstances to this case that are unrelated to the fall and the cause of death that illuminate other systemic issues in the care of older people. This aspect will be presented in the November issue of the RAC Communique.
Let's now listen to our expert commentary titled Trauma Geriatricians.
Expert Commentary, Trauma Geriatricians, by Dr. Kate Gregovic, geriatrician and internal medicine physician. While the stereotypical trauma patient is a younger man in a motor vehicle accident, increasingly the actual trauma patient is an older adult with a ground level fall. Older adults now make up around a third of all people with trauma, and the low fall is the most common mechanism of injury. As a trauma geriatrician, the stories of Mr. DC and Mr. JH are far too common. A fall from standing height, doing a simple everyday activity, such as using the bathroom, that results in catastrophic injuries. Injuries that are the result of frailty, osteopenia, and the physiological changes of age. Injuries that are unsurvivable for an older adult with medical comorbidity. Mr. DC's case highlights the challenges of falls prevention. There is no evidence that sensor mats reduce the risk of falls in either the hospital or inpatient setting, but they are frequently used regardless, almost as they give the appearance of doing something. Mr. DC had a thorough assessment, including physiotherapy and podiatry, and was given a falls prevention plan. It is worth considering that many of Mr. DC's risk factors were intrinsic, such as his mobility limitations. Falls prevention strategies need to be co-created with consumers. It was noted that Mr. DC had not worn appropriate footwear or called for assistance at the time of the fall that led to his death. Mr. DC was reported as being non-compliant with seeking assistance. While it is assumed that younger adults have a right to undertake risky activities, such as bungee jumping or drinking alcohol to excess, the same dignity is not always given to older adults. Falls prevention should be undertaken as shared decision-making, where the person at risk of falling and the health professionals work together to develop a plan that is in keeping with the individual's goals and preferences. We could speculate that Mr. DC may have valued his independence and not wished to call for assistance mobilising, and he may have chosen not to wear the prescribed footwear. This does raise an ethical challenge for healthcare professionals. But individuals or their medical treatment decision maker do have the right to take risks. Falls prevention strategies that are unacceptable to the person at risk of falling are bound to fail. The recommendation by the coroner that falls strategies should be implemented at all times, particularly preventing any independent mobility, is unlikely to be feasible without a dramatic increase in staffing. An increase that is likely cost prohibitive. It also risks restrictive interventions, as residents cannot always be watched in their rooms. One important aspect of falls prevention is rationalisation of medication management. Mr. JH experienced dizziness prior to falling. Cessation of medications associated with falls, particularly antihypertensives, should be a routine part of falls prevention. Both cases also highlight the issue of where older adults with trauma should receive care. Mr. JH was initially cared for in his facility and was not transferred until he deteriorated, which unfortunately resulted in an emergency department visit. The case report does not state whether Mr. JH had an advanced care plan. If he did, an appropriate course of action could have been a decision for him to receive palliation in his residential care facility. This, of course, requires discussion with the resident, their medical treatment decision maker, aged care managers, and a doctor who has adequate clinical expertise. Many facilities are able to access in-reach programs run through public hospitals, and this can facilitate specialist involvement. Being able to remain in the facility also depends on access to palliative care, including medications to manage symptoms at end of life. The trauma model in Victoria is based around a centralised model of care, with two adult major trauma services. The decision for Mr. DC to remain at his local centre was made by his medical treatment decision maker, in keeping with his wishes. While centralised trauma models of care have demonstrated improved survival for trauma in younger adults, it is less clear whether this also holds true for older adults with a low energy mechanism of injury, largely due to a lack of evidence. It is certainly challenging for patients and their families if they are transferred far from home and supports, but it can also mean access to specialist care. It is also important that people should not be excluded from specialist care based on age and frailty alone. Utilisation of telehealth and remote access to radiology imaging and trauma specialists could provide a way to overcome health inequity for people in rural areas and prevent unnecessary transfers. The vast majority of people, even older people, who have a low fall will get up and go on with their day. The people who require hospital admission following low energy trauma will invariably have complex issues. The orthogeriatric model of care has decreased mortality for older adults with hip fractures, and this has inspired the development of trauma geriatrics. This is a new subspecialty for geriatrics, where patients with trauma are co-managed between trauma specialists and geriatricians from the beginning of the hospital admission. Older adults are at higher risk of being under-triaged and have higher mortality with similar injuries. Inclusion of geriatricians in care can ensure that there is a collaborative management of injuries and any medical conditions. Many principles of orthogeriatric care, such as early mobilisation and delirium prevention strategies, have crossover with trauma. Trauma in older adults, from falls prevention to management of injuries, needs interdisciplinary care and involvement of consumers.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode. Remember, the online print versions are available at our website, which also includes a list of the recommended resources and references. Remember to explore our website, which now has an extensive podcast catalogue of previous editions for all communiques. And we also have a library of recorded webinars that examine clinical dilemmas and mental health. I'm Joseph Ibrahim. Thanks for listening.